Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So in the mindfulness practice, we breathe into the present moment and we meet life on life's terms. Then we open our heart and we allow the wisdom of the heart to instruct us. In our revealing service, one of our folks saw a turtle in the middle of the road, and they stopped their car and they picked up the turtle and they moved him to the side of the road because their heart had opened enough to discover there's a sentient being in harm's way, and could I be courageous enough to tie his shoelaces, to lift him up and move him away. I discovered this week from one of the silly game shows that a spider has a heart, and I had no awareness of that. And I began to see things differently. And then I hear Karen Drucker's song, "We Can Change the World One Heart at a Time." When our heart is open, as Rumi says, when the window of the heart is open, love can flow from heart to heart. And then Rumi said, but if there's no wall between us, well, what need is there of a window? And so when the wall of separation comes down and the heart opens, there is the potential and possibility that we might discover a congruency, a harmony, a balance, a resonance in the moment with what is, not with what we want to be, not with what we resist is, no, but just with what is. And then we smile. We say, this is the life the Lord has made. Could I rejoice and be glad in it? And with that awareness, I invite you to open your eyes and we'll enter into this space together. Curious. Curiosity is a beautiful thing because it means we're teachable, that we have something to learn, that life is an oracle that is going to give us a blessing if we can grow from it. Or we can say life is a curse and then you die. My prayer partner, he's been retired from ministry for a long time, and last Sunday he was invited to speak at the Unity Church in Vancouver, British Columbia, and he sent me his talk, and it was so sweet because he talked about death, and he said, if you don't know how to die, you don't know how to live. And he shared a story of a hospice worker who went to a woman. She was an immigrant to Canada. She'd been there a year. She was from the Philippines. They were a nice Catholic family. Her daughter was 40 years of age, and the daughter had terminal cancer. And so he was called in as a hospice worker to attend the daughter, who he knew was terminal. And the mother was so concerned about her daughter. And so he said to the mother, he said, so what have you been doing during this time? It's been stressful for you. And she says, I spend all my time praying. And he says, well, that's beautiful. He says, what are you praying for? And she says, I'm praying that my daughter has more time. And then he said, well, I'm going to say something that might upset you. He says, but what if your prayer has been answered? Oh, she didn't like that. She said, you're going to need to leave. So a week later, when he was on his rounds visiting his hospice patients, he knocked on her door, expecting that she wouldn't answer. And she flung open the door with a smile on her face, so filled with light and love. And she said, you were right. She said, I do have time with her. And this time is sacred. It's not about denying that she's going to die. It's about taking the time that we have left and making it a sacred time. So in his little comment that maybe your prayer was answered, she began to hear it with a different set of perceptions. So what if we get to take responsibility for how we're perceiving this world? I saw, you know, there's a lot of troubling things going on the planet, and especially if you're a gay person, if you're trans. And I saw in Florida, they have the Don't Say Gay law. So I'm gay, by the way. I'm not moving to Florida. I can say it here. And it's not a sex thing. It's about who I am as a human being, just like the trans community. It's so beautiful. A friend of mine is in a 12-step program, and they say they welcome all men and women, and the trans community say, couldn't you just welcome all people? And so one of the persons in this 12-step program was an old, dyed-in-the-wool, no, we have a way of doing things here, and we're not going to change it. But then my friend spoke to the person, and he says, could we see things with a different way? That if this offends them, we just make a bigger palette and saying all people, whatever your preferences, are all invited here at this meeting. And he said, I saw someone, just by approaching them from the heart space, they began to shift. So what if we get to be mindful on how we navigate, which is what I'm speaking about this month, navigate the times of change in a more loving way? I'm going to close today's talk with something controversial, something that was banned in Florida by one parent who was threatened by Amanda Gorman's poem at the inauguration on January 20th, 2 weeks after the insurrection, where she was building bridges of forgiveness and love in this beautiful poem. And one of the parents in Florida said, I want this banned from the schools so children can't read this poem. Well, I'm going to read it to you at the end of this talk, and you can see what a beautiful testament this is to opening our hearts and not cursing our past, but building upon it in a more mindful sort of way. I wanted to announce that we're doing this Thursday night, the first Thursday of the month from 5 to 6, beloved Emily Stoddart, not related to my Stoddart, she's going to be doing a sound bath. I was going to try to frame it in a way that it's a healing space where we tune into this resonating field of love and we align with our heart. Beloved Susan Jackson in our closing class this Wednesday brought a taste of what that would be like. And we ended our class on Wednesday with a sound bath. And it's not for everybody, but it is an opportunity to stop, just like with the bell, to go within and to hear what's resonating in the soul. It's a very healing space. You might say it's a place of coherence, where we enter into the heart space and we rest in that space. And she's a Reiki master too, and she has beautiful energy. So the invitation, again, is to be still, to open our heart, to enter into this field of resonance, and then you begin to realize it's all a field of resonance. This planet is a field of resonance. Could we drink from the nectar of that? I've been greatly inspired by a scientist who's, you want to find spirituality, go to science. And Bruce Lipton is one of my favorites and one of Raoul's favorites. This book is like 1,000 pages long, so I wouldn't burden you with it. But he starts off by saying how we're all screwed up the way we perceive things. We see things in a literal way. We think that the facts are the truth. But he says what we are is really spiritual beings. So here's the scientist saying we got it all wrong. And one chapter after another said, what a mess we made. And there's an imperative. Everything you know is wrong. The four myths of perceptions are the apocalypse. You know, the myth that only matter matters. You're not a physical being. You're a spiritual being. The myth perception that it's survival of the fittest. Oh, those days are long gone. If you think that way, you have to have an assault rifle to protect yourself. Or the misperception that it's all in your genes. No, don't blame my genetic makeup for who I am. It's not my dad's fault or my mother's fault. It's nobody's fault. And the myth and perception that evolution is random. He says evolution is intentional. And then you hear Dr. Ernest Holmes. It's about involution and evolution, which is Sri Aurobindo. So could we evolve from within? Barry understands this. And then when you evolve from within and you find that peaceful center, well, then the world isn't your enemy. Someone came walking through my garden. You know, I'm talking about the coherence of the heart, so I guess I have to meet people at the heart level. And this woman said, I'm your neighbor, and we're friends on Facebook. And I said, well, I don't know my friends on Facebook, and our last name is the same. I said, oh, okay. And she wanted to see my garden, and so I took her around the garden. That's an invasive plant. Well, And I said, you know, that's all your judgment that it's an invasive plant. It grows well here. You know, someone gave me a few hellebores. Hellebores is a beautiful plant. Do you know what that is, the Lenten rose? But she's taking over the backyard. And now it's a beautiful plant. Am I going to throw the hellebores out? No. They're very expensive plants. So when someone wants to judge it as invasive, and I say it's just a healthy plant, I'm trying not to offend her, but to find a coherent place. So let me give you an idea of what this coherence is. This is how the book ends, 1,000 pages. This is your practice. As suggested earlier, the scientist says, heaven isn't a destination you go to when you die, Miss Mary. Heaven is a practice that you live day to day. Now, heaven is the consciousness of wholeness. Heaven is a place of harmony and divine love. Now, what if we could practice heaven here on earth instead of seeking it when we die? That's what the scientist is saying. So to facilitate our maturation from children of God into adults of God, we can engage in practices and exercises that can create congruency between our inner selves and our outer expression. Congruency between who you are on the inside and how you express on the outside. So could we find that loving place so that when we meet the neighbor and she's saying your plants are invasive, could we still be loving to her and not get defensive and say, leave the garden? No, you come and I'll give you as many invasive plants as you want to put in your garden. Just bring your trowel. We can support our evolution by selecting a practice or process that harmonizes the outer world with our inner well-being. Now, isn't this the whole science of mind, the whole premise of life, to be congruous with yourself? When there's peace in the heart, there's peace in the home. When there's love in the heart, there's love in the home. When there's contentment in the heart, there's contentment in the home. But if you don't have contentment here, if you don't have peace here, you're going to translate that into your living environment. So it's all an inside job. As Barry would say, it's what you make it, babe. It's what you make it. So he goes on to say, selecting a practice, this is so great, to maximize our potential is truly a matter of your personal choice. So for some people, what connects them to source is quilting. For some people, what connects them to source is working out at the gym. What some people connects them to source is going to a meeting and sitting in a circle. So we get to find out how we align to that place within ourselves. Maybe holding Bruce in your arms aligns you to that place. So could we be curious enough to say, how can I get to a field of resonance where I'm in coherence with life? Now, I know for me, my coherence is intending the garden or intending my animals. And then I realized that my animals tend me. This video popped up on my phone, and it always seems to do it on Sunday mornings. And I had to send it to Jody right off because it was maybe 10 years ago. We were up in Maine. We were staying in a little cabin on a lake. And in the morning, in walks a wolf. And I knew that a wolf lived down the street. His name was Moose. And we were told about him and that every now and then he would come and he would take your dog's bones. So I woke up and there was Moose in the downstairs. I'm in the upstairs looking down and he's got Bert's bone in his mouth. Bert and Spex said, well, if you want to have it, I got extras. You can go ahead and take it. And Moose took the bone, went out of the thing. And I said, Trey, wake up, wake up. The wolf was just in the house. Well, then the next morning, Bert's out on the deck cleaning the baby as he does every morning. He cleans her ears, cleans her neck. And I'm videotaping the baby sitting out there. And in walks Moose. And I'm going, holy shit, Moose is back. And he came in. I said, you want to come in, Moose, and get another bone? And he just wanted to come and play with Bert and Speck because they had a coherence. He wasn't the mean old wolf. No, he was Moose the lover, who was showing up to welcome them to Maine. In Maine, we do things differently. I share your bone, you can share my bone. You can under the trailer with me and I'll go. And you know what? When we left that cabin that week, we stayed up there for a week. The old man came down to the cabin where we were staying with Moose. And he says, I'll come to say goodbye to the dogs. He didn't come to say goodbye to me. So now that's a coherent story. It's true. Jody saw the video this morning. So you got to find the way you get coherent. Mindfulness is one of the training exercises to rein in the conscious mind that's wandering into the past or the future. Now, mindfulness training is what we should be teaching in religious science, because in religious science, they talk about our conscious mind can take dominion over the subconscious mind if we're aware of what the subconscious mind's doing. So if your subconscious mind is all distorted, and then, Sylvia, then you see the beauty of being a joyful person, because then you begin to amplify joy in the world. your coherence of joy. Essentially, mindfulness disengages the automatic subconscious programs so that the conscious mind, which is our seat of personal wishes and aspirations, what we want, it can generate behavior that is coherent with our intentions. So what if we, by taking dominion over our subconscious mind, we can say, I may have been a reactionary jerk in the past, but I don't do that anymore. I don't project into the future how Michael should be. I don't look at his past and condemn it. No, we're in the present moment with an intention to embrace what it is that we choose at this time. And I choose harmony. I choose love. I choose forgiveness. I choose acceptance. So he says this, essentially mindfulness disengages us from the subconscious and lets us enter into this conscious mind. Practices that you might want to consider are meditation, yoga, breath work, sound baths, relaxation, tai chi, qigong, going to the gym, cultivating harmony, cultivating coherence, and you get to decide what it is. You're going to go for a rafting trip. I know every time Bob and Jody get on that canoe and they're going down that river, they're in the zone. I bet you don't talk much, do you? No, you don't need to, because you're surrounded by this tapestry, this intelligent universe. The first Sunday of this month, for those of you who weren't here, I talked about listening to the voice of the world. It's always speaking. So could we be humble enough to hear? It doesn't speak a language like we speak. It speaks the language of silence. And then you hear Eckhart Tolle, silence is the language of God. Everything else is a poor translation. So could we hear that silence and what it's really saying? Listen to Herman when he's speaking to you. You know, I have this blind, deaf pug who is such an angel in my life because he's always telling me what he wants. And he's become so woven into my heart. It's like he's become my teacher. And he takes care of me. I make the mistake of thinking I'm taking care of him. But he's really tending his adults in his own sweet sort of way. He lets us know when he's abandoned. He's amazing. So, I'm going to go over here. Oh, and then they give, because it's scientists, they give you proof, Raoul. On May 20th in 2007, they did the World Peace Meditation. And then they tested it, and the crime rate went down all over the country once we were coming from a place of peace. So they said coherent consciousness will impact our life forever when we can find harmony and balance and peace. And goes on to say, could the vision of a coherent civilization whose collective consciousness is focused on love, on health, harmony, and happiness, truly create a field strong enough to manifest heaven right here on Earth? Well, as scientists, we think we can. Yes, we know we can. Well, here's our scientific community saying we can be better than this. We don't have to condemn some people to make others acceptable. We can embrace every single one. He says, how can one generate positive feelings when there is no reason for us to be happy? I thought of you, Miss Sylvia, when I read this. He said this in her book called Happy for No Reason at All. The writer says, when you're happy for no reason at all, well, then you bring happiness to your outer experience rather than trying to extract happiness from them. So when Sylvia shows up glowing with her joy bubble, she's bringing that to all of us so we can drink from it. Not that she's trying to extract it from us. And so then you begin to see joy in a different way. The very end of the book, last paragraph, gets to the nitty-gritty. He says, we're a mess. What's the hope for planet Earth? And he says this, if this evolutionary step toward planetary coherence seems huge, perhaps we need an even bigger perspective. The evolution of humanity is not an ending, but it has to be our beginning. The unification of humanity, where we come together as one life, embracing all life, not Jewish life or Christian life or black life or yellow life or big, no, one life, whether it's a spider or a turtle, it's all the one life. The evolution of humanity is not an ending, but it's its beginning. And this stage of humanity's development completes the evolution of our planet. And through the evolution of humanity, we will come to see Earth not as a physical planet, but rather as a living cell. And what happens within the cell of humanity and the planet fulfills its evolution. It assembles into colonies with other evolved cells to share this awareness. Like attracts like. So those who want to evolve will come together in maybe a small group, but we're the beginning of what needs to happen on planet Earth. And then the very last, I circled the last paragraph. Consequently, The real change for the individual is to practice evolution and to learn the lessons of the old stories so we no longer need to repeat them. And to remind ourselves that the critical mass of humanity involved with this evolution will change the world from the inside out. It's that critical mass, that 100th monkey. When enough of us are thinking this way, consciousness shifts. So we have to build that critical mass. We are living in a positive future, practicing heaven right here on earth and designing a bridge across which the whole of humanity will walk. We need to build bridges to connect us, not walls to protect us and hide behind. The last sentence of the book. This is our love story, Mr. Barry. A universal love story. A love story for the entire universe. For you, me, everyone, and every living organism. And now let's head into Act 5. He's saying it's time to change the way we live. Bruce Lipton, Raoul. It's time to create a whole new world, one heart at a time. So I was reflecting on, if he says you have to find your way of coherence, I know my way of coherence is to tend the garden. I came into the center this morning and I've planted a tomato plant that I grew from seed, the same one I gave you, Jody, and she was drooping over like this. And I threw these 4 o'clock seeds I brought back from Portugal and threw them around this thing. Well, they were all drooping. In fact, everything was drooping. And so I went in and I watered and I watered and I came back and they forgave. And they were perky and fresh and thing. And so I thought I did a good deed. But then I said, I'm going to share this responsibility. If you notice when you're driving around here, if these plants need water, you can feel free to give them a drink. I don't have to hoard the whole thing myself. I will share the responsibility. And so Trey's cleaning up the house. His sister's coming to visit from Maine. And his way of cleaning is to throw everything out. And so he went to the where I keep all my garden magazines. And he found that there was one that was still in the plastic wrapper from 2007. And it was a special edition, and it was called Gardens Illustrated, the special edition. And I open it, and one article after another of people finding coherence in a garden. It started with a young man, 24, who worked at a factory. And he said it was so depressing at the factory that he started growing bulbs and flowers in old tin cans outside the factory. And now people stop by to see his flowers. He goes in on his day off to tend his flowers. And he says, I do that not to create beauty at the factory, but because I feel so good when I nurture these flowers. And then it went to this man who had a grow box. Now, I have a grow box over there. I've invited Gigi and Raoul to pick some kale, and Jody's gotten to pick some kale. This man, all he had was a grow box. Grow box number 29 in a city. And he talks about his grow box. He said, I learned to grow things when I was a little boy. He said, my dad gave me some nasturtium seeds because he loved nasturtiums. They're a wild, sassy little plant. And so every time I plant nasturtium seeds, I'm 5 again, and my dad's with me. And my brother, who's no longer on the planet, I see him in the flowers. So when he grows his garden, it has a method to it. He says, Dad gave me those magical nasturtium seeds, and now I grow these flowers, and I feel his love. My garden is about loving the soil. So if you will, and it's about helping others to live. My job is to create conditions where the plants want to grow. Gardening is my yoga. It's my breathing. It slows down. My heart rate gets quiet. He said, my anxieties just slip away, Miss Mary. All because I was tending my little grow box number 29. I always seem to leave that grow box centered and ready to take on my day. Well, I think that's a coherent action, don't you think, Miss Eliza? He goes on to say, it is not about harvesting a crop or taking from the box. It's almost holding the land's hand. Like any relationship, it's about my attention, putting in the work, loving the work that I do. And sometimes I just pop by my box number 29 to see how she is and to say hello. Now, wasn't that a wonderful article? And at the very end of this, he says, at its heart, I hope my box number 29 is an enchanted place to get almost lost in. A garden where perhaps a small boy, now I'm 74, he says, where the small boy in me can turn his brown water into beautiful flowers that express color, and to play hide and seek among the giant colored corn that are tasseling in front of me, and the amaranth that overflows. I'm not growing to harvest a great crop. I'm growing because it feels so good to see these things. And when I enter into the garden, I find my soul there. So the invitation for you today is to consider what brings coherence in your life. Where does your heart open? And then have the courage enough, the faith enough, the discipline enough to commit to that. My beloved Marion over here has found that when she started loving her body and tending it through nutrition and exercise, she was completely changed on the inside. What if her example is for all of us to learn from? When we start changing who we are on the inside, our whole world on the outside changes. It's that simple. So I think it's time for little Amanda Gorman. What do you think? Are you ready to be offended by a beautiful young black woman? And you know what she wants to do her next job? She wants to become president of the United States. She's 21 years old. Been banned by Florida because she wrote a poem. Here's what she wrote. She says, "We do not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour in our world. But within it, we have found the power to author a new chapter." She's going to take responsibility for the chapter that she's a part of at age 21. "To offer hope, to offer laughter, to offer love to others." She's not offering them judgment and condemnation and rejection. She's offering them hope, laughter, and love. So she goes on to say, "We will not march back to what was, but now we must move to what shall be in a country that is bruised but yet whole, a country that is benevolent but yet bold, a country that is fierce and free." So she's inviting us to get this original vision of the potential and possibility of our America as an inclusive country where all, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. I want to be, my relatives were all immigrants. Anybody else not an immigrant? Or were you all immigrants like me? Yeah. And we were invited in. And we were given refuge. So here, I'm going to just give you the end of her poem. She says, "Let the globe, if nothing else, say that this is true. That even as we grieve, we grow." My prayer partner in his talk on death, he was talking about this husband and wife. And he says, when someone is dying, you get to say to them, "I love you in my grief." Huh. And she's saying that too. Even as we've grieved, we've grown. And even as we hurt, we hope. And even as we're tired, we tried. And that we'll forever be tied together as one life and victorious. We will be forever, that's coherency, tied together. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division among each other. She's trying to build a bridge of understanding with each other. Whether you're red or you're blue, whether you're gay or you're straight, whether you're black or you're white. She said, let's build a bridge of understanding between us. That's what she wants, not what we've had. And so she said, "Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid." No one should be made afraid because we don't fit in, because we're a little different, we're a little unique. "If we are to live up to our own times," she said, "then victory won't lie in the blade, but it will lie in the bridges that we've made to one another." Not in the blade. I assume that's a weapon. She said, if we're living up to our own time, this is the promise. The hill we climb, if only we dare, it's because being American is more than pride that we've inherited a great country. Being an American, it's the past that we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it, would rather destroy our country if it meant that they could delay democracy. Remember, it's 2 weeks after January 6th. So let us leave behind a country better than the one that we were left. With every breath, my bronze-pounded heart, we will raise the wounded world into a wondrous world. We will raise from the golden hills of the West, and we will rise, that was words rise, and we will rise from the windswept north, east, where the forefathers first realized revolution, and we will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of our Midwestern states, and we will rise from our sun-baked Southern states, and we will rebuild, we will reconcile, we will recover, and every known nook of our nation and every corner called our country, our people, diverse and beautiful, well, we will emerge battered, but better and beautiful. And when day comes, we step out of the shade of flame and unafraid, well, then the new dawn balloons as we free it. The new dawn balloons as we free it. For there is always light. If only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it, if only we're brave enough to tell a new story. Could we tell a new story? Not one of gloom and doom and ain't it awful, but like Barry said, we can change it when we set our intention because we create our own reality. So she's saying the same thing. Let's build bridges of oneness. Let's create a field of coherence. Let's bring joy and acceptance to the world. So that's the invitation. That's the challenge. That's the opportunity for all of us at this stage to be responsible for what we're bringing into the world. So we're going to do, should we do a little song with it? Yeah, pass the plate and then I'll do a closing meditation. Yeah, and it's Breaking Bread Sunday next week. So bring a dish, we'll share it. This Wednesday, Thursday night is the Sound Bowl. So if you want to come and absorb that frequency. And there's a new class that's starting up a week from Wednesday. There's a sign-up sheet in the bookstore. And if you want to attend, it's about trusting in the gold, which is about trusting in this true nature. And you know, as someone said in our beautiful Wednesday night's class, life is a participatory event. I think that was Terry Boy. And he brought this beautiful presentation. Are you choosing to participate in life in a conscious, healthy way where we are part of the solution instead of part of the problem? We get to do it, you know, one heart at a time. Start by smiling at your neighbor, watering a plant. There's a feral cat, Jody, that keeps howling every night, keeps Trey awake, and I've been trying to rescue it. He's so cute. I think he's the reincarnation of one of our past cats that keeps haunting the yard. But you know, they're all your children after a while. So he's a feral cat. You need another cat, don't you? I'm just... So, Gigi, are you going to help? Should we do the collection? Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Okay, and then we'll do a song, and I'll do a meditation. I'll do a meditation and then a song. Yeah. There is a basket in the back for those of you who come early. So entrain yourself to the music. It's bringing you to that center place. Breath becomes conscious. And this is a moment of coherence where we're coming together in that field. And Jody, if you'd like to ring the bell one time. The mindfulness bell says stop. Within. And listen. If you have a practice of meditation, when you go within and you listen, sometimes you hear the voices of the personality that has an intention and an opinion. But after a while, that voice becomes quiet. And then you're still listening. And you're beginning to feel things. Feel a sense of belonging to your body. Sometimes we're disengaged with our body, but when we really belong to our body, we listen to its messages. And when it's suffering, when it's struggling, well, then we seek to embrace the body in its struggle with love, with acceptance, not with shame, not with some kind of radical way of you've got to change, you got to stop and be something that you aren't. No, we learn to love ourselves right where we are. That embrace, whatever it is that isn't skillful, begins to fall away because it's not the truth of us. And we have made a commitment to truth with the big T. It is said in the Sufi tradition, you must want truth as much as the drowning man wants that gasp of air if you are to achieve this truth. So it is our consent that brings in the grace. You could say, this too is good, this too is God, and I make a demand on the universe to see the blessing in what I might have labeled a challenge or a problem. When I change the way I look at things, the things I look at change. It isn't a problem. It's an opportunity for the heart to open, for a skillful action to replace an unskillful one. And so something needs to be sacrificed on the altar of change. If we're going to navigate change, we must be willing to let go of a pattern that's not skillful anymore, so that we can open to something that is waiting for us in harmony, in balance, a resonating field where the soul can smile. I'd like in your mind's eye to see Moose, the wolf who became a pet, waddling into a cabin with joy in his heart, ready to share a bone with a very loving dog, not as competing for the bone, but as three wonderful animals meeting in a field of love where they got to share in the moment. Totally surprised in the oneness. So we enter into that realization, that recognition that there is only one life. And when we explore the unification stage, well, then we know that we have arrived in that coherent place, the one life, God's life, embraced amidst the human element that oftentimes can be challenging. And so our humanity and our divinity come together in a dance of light, a dance of service, a dance of playful surrender and trust as we tell the universe how grateful we are to be given this amazing life and to be given a consciousness that is awakening to its heavenly nature, so that we can practice heaven right here on earth, bringing the light of love wherever we go and seeing it mirrored back in the reflection of the one that sees itself endlessly anew. We hear in the Bible where it says, behold, I make all things new. So we stop clinging to the old. And in embracing the newness, we breathe into a new life that's longing to be revealed by means of all of us. So I invite you to open your arms, feel that symbolic gesture like you're taking it all in, and now bring that life right down into your heart chakra and say with me, I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
You
are the emerging presence of light. Illumining the darkness. Bringing joy to the world. Finding peace in relationships.
Seeing possibilities in problems.
Knowing that we are the way.
This divine love finds an outlet
to express our oneness
and heal into wholeness. knowing it's already done. You accept it and say yes. 1,000 times yes. And all is added unto us. With ease and grace, we let it be so.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.